Hello, and welcome to The Raw Bar. I'm Goddess Cecilia, pleasure educator and consultant, and I will be your host. I've invited my friends and colleagues to sit, snack, get real, and probably a little salty about sexuality and pleasure. We've also saved a seat for you. And because of the nature of this podcast, we want to make sure that you're aware that there will be conversations about sexuality, sexual acts, probably some spicy language, and a bunch of other things that are definitely not appropriate for younger ears. So give yourself some solo time if you can. Grab a drink like tea, wine, water, or boba. Don't forget your snackies. Ease in and get comfy. Here's to a pleasurable time together. This season of Raw Bar with Goddess Cecilia is brought to you by MysteryPleasureBox.com. Surprise yourself with a subscription to MysteryPleasureBox.com, a fun and affordable way to discover new sex toys and novelty products every month, billed and delivered discreetly. You get an arsenal of potions, lotions, sex toys, and bedroom accessories picked by industry experts. Every box you receive is packed with high-quality, full-size, brand-name products from brands you know and love. So sign up at MysteryPleasureBox.com and use code GODDESS for 10% off your first box. Folks, I'm so excited to be joined by Maria Two-Straps, whose pronouns are she and her. So who the fuck is Maria Two-Straps? Hell, she asks herself that every day. One thing she knows for sure is that she is passionate about her love for human sexuality. She intends to use that fuel to help push a message that she wholeheartedly believes in. She is a sex and relationship coach, a sex educator, an intimacy coordinator, and a loud and proud queer kinky Filipina. She knows many aspects of human sexuality, relationships, intimacy, and sex are difficult to talk about. That's why she chose to turn these fields into her career. She's here to stir the pot and fuck shit up in the best, most empowering, and most productive way possible. Ugh. When I read your bio, I was like, this is literally like everything. This is what I want for everybody.
Thank you. I feel so honored to be here. So thank you.
Oh my gosh. It's really my pleasure to be able to bring folks on here with me. One of the things that I've been telling people is that part of the reason I started this little project was to like connect with folks that a pandemic has kept me from, essentially. And I've missed so much of the socializing with other sex educators. And you and I connected, I think, last year after the awful stuff that had happened in the world, but also because there was an awful person who calls himself a sex educator out there in the world, like using really awful Asian stereotypes in her content. And so for me, like, not just being in New England, I think being in New England is a huge part of it, but there's almost this like weird isolation when it comes to being Filipino in New England, but also being Filipino in the sexuality field. So when I discovered you, I think your Instagram profile, I was like, I have to admit, one of the first things I do is I'm like, is this person Filipino? And I just start like trying to find out.
I am. I promise. I was born there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Me too. Me too. Actually.
Yes. Yeah. Silangkabite.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Nice. I was born in Makati.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha. And then yeah, my parents flew me out here because the Mount Pinatubo erupted in 1991. So. Right. They're like, oh, we should probably leave because we don't want to die. So they took me.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm so glad you're here.
Yes, thank you. I'm so happy to be here and honored. But when I have to preface, like, when I get excited, it's really weird. It's just my right eye that cries. So if you see me like tearing up from my right eye, just know I'm having a great time. So it's
okay.
Weird.
No,
so weird. It's so weird. It's just my right eye.
It's all good because when I get excited, I basically cry from both eyes.
I'll just be crying the whole time.
Oh,
great.
It'll be great. You know what? We need a little more of like honest, real emotion on the internet. All right. So let's talk about what we are sharing together. Because I was just saying, I was like, I need to invite more Filipinos on here because then it means I'll get to eat more Filipino food. But
oh my gosh.
This is your idea.
Yes. I got my food here ready.
I love it. Me too. I cut it up. And all of this is the same. I love it. I cut it up because I don't know why. I was like, I'm just going to cut it up. I just started and I just kept going. And like, I have to tell you, this is a plate for my son because all of our other plates are in the dishwasher.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
You know what? It is a functional plate.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that. Cheers. Cheers to our
So this is, which is essentially like longaniza, which is like a Filipino sausage. There's always egg and rice. Did you do like a garlic rice?
Yes. Garlic rice.
Yes.
Yep. You gotta do the garlic rice for sure.
You gotta do the garlic rice. I even was like, I'm gonna put it in a little Pyrex bowl.
It's so cute. It's perfect. I know growing up, especially in elementary school, I think this is like where my early drama started. It was kids on the playground that would always make fun of my food, and there was always something. I didn't realize how much it hurt until I grew older, and they would make fun of my food. Like, why is it purple? Or like, why does it smell weird? But in my head, I'm like, but it's good. It's yummy. Like, you get the fuck out of here with your bologna and mayonnaise sandwich. This is fun. Good food. Sucks. It hurt a lot. And then I stopped bringing it to school. But now, cool to try the ethnic cuisine. It's cool to try this and that. And I'm like, whatever. I'm just going to eat whatever I love. And I don't care. You think what
That's
you
right.
want.
That's right. So, well, let's get into it. Oh, also, I wanted to say that I found, this is one of those things where it's like, in LA, it's so easy to find these things, but in Boston, it's, oh my God, I have to buy everything. But I have calamansi juice.
Oh, no way.
Because I was like, oh shit, we're going to do it all.
Yeah, I have a calamansi tree. So if you're ever here in LA, you're more than welcome to take some. So...
Gladly. Oh my God. Yes. Will they survive the flight? I hope so.
I hope so. They will. They're resilient. Like us.
Yeah. Yes. All right. So let's get into it. And also, obviously, feel free to like eat while we're like chatting. Part of this is that it's really super casual. But yeah. So let's start with, what is your sex ed origin story?
Oh, my sex ed origin story. Goodness. I stretch a little bit before I answer that. Believe it or not, when I was much younger, middle school, high school, it was the complete opposite of everything. I had long hair. I was pretty passive. I was pretty shy. I liked boys, or thought I liked boys, whatever. And I was very Catholic because I grew up Catholic, conservative, Filipino household. And I would pray the rosary every day. I would go to church every Sunday. I would go to confession, I'd take Holy Communion. I even wanted to be a nun in high school, which a lot of people are like, that's bullshit.
Yeah,
I was there. And it wasn't until high school when I started exploring more of my sexuality and started realizing, hey, I like girls and it's not going away. And it's not just a phase. And then I would take, you know, what our sex ed classes were in this Catholic private high school. And they would just say things, whatever, you can be gay, we'll love you, but you can't get married, you can't fall in love, you can't have sex. And I was like, ouch, that sucks. Like all of this, I go to church and I devote so much of my time to this and blah, blah, blah. And then I came out when I was 18 before college. And then I did a lot of stupid things. I did a lot of dumb things. I made my mistakes and I learned from it. And then I realized that if I had only had some proper education on this, I could have made some wiser decisions. I couldn't have put myself in these dangerous situations. I learned a lot from that. And then I realized, holy shit, it was this conservative, this Catholic upbringing that really shame, made me feel a lot of shame and guilt when I was a teen. I would masturbate and I would feel so bad. I would take the bus straight to church and go to confession. I was like, oh my God, I'm so bad. I'm such a horrible person. I'm going to go to hell and blah, blah, blah. And I was just so tired of feeling that way, tired of feeling shameful and guilty. And I was like, this is important stuff. If more people knew about this stuff, they wouldn't be, they'd be more well-versed in making these healthier choices for themselves. And sexuality is so important. It's a part of who we all are. And we wouldn't be here if it weren't for sex. So might as well learn as much as we can.
Yeah.
So that's my sex ed origin story, but I turned out the complete opposite of everything my parents expected. So from this shy, very passive Filipina chick with long hair who liked boys, and now I'm this queer atheist sex educator and sex and relationships coach and intimacy coordinator with red hair.
I love it. I love it. So I'm going to assume that Two Straps is not technically your legal name. No. And it's not really like a Filipino nickname probably either.
No.
So would you be down for letting us know like how you came up with that name?
Oh, you had to have been there. So it was supposed to be a temporary nickname that these group of folks, we all named each other to something. And then it named be Two Straps. And then it just stuck.
Yeah.
Cool. It's catchy. Maria Two Straps. I'm just gonna keep it. It just stuck. And I was like, I'm not gonna change it, whatever. But those people are the only people that know. I haven't actually told anyone what it means. It's been 10 years.
Oh, so I like that.
You can think whatever you want. It.
I like it. I like the mystery. I think, you know what? That is the perfect answer for that question, honestly.
Two Straps, it's whatever you want it to mean.
Yes. And people's imagination can go as wild as they'd like it to. I welcome that for sure.
Yeah, go crazy. Go for it.
Now, what was it like, considering that you went from something that was so different to who you are now, what was it like for you being Filipino with such a non-traditional job? Not a nurse. Not a dentist.
Not a nurse, not a dentist, not a doctor. It's very, I take so much pride and joy in what I do. I'm passionate about it. I love it. But there are times where it does feel very isolating. Because the sex ed space, it's resistance everywhere you go. I'm sure it's resistance everywhere you go. And then also the fact that there aren't very many sex educators that I see that look like us, you know, sex educators. So it's very isolating. And then I feel like my parents don't really know and understand the extent of what I do. I think they just turn a blind eye to it. And they're like, okay, you're doing that. Okay, cool, whatever. They asked me the other day, oh, would you want to get a 9-to-5 job? Like, absolutely not. Absolutely the fuck not. No, I would rather stab myself in the eye with a dull fork than get a 9-to-5 job. But this is what I do and this is what I love. But my right eye is crying because I'm so excited. But it does feel very isolating. But I think one day they'll understand and they'll get it. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's one of those, like, our parents realistically weren't given the words, the language to even really talk about it. Okay, I want to dive into that a little bit because I do hear that Filipinos are actually really open about talking about sex, talking about their love lives, like being a little bit like chismosa about it, but also they're just supposedly, right? We're all like very open about it. We don't mind talking about the nasty shit we've done, but not... But there's like a level where it stops, I feel like. We can talk about it in a sort of like show-offy way almost to other people outside of our family, but not when it comes to like sexual health matter necessarily. It feels very, oh God, I can't think of the word, but like very showy as opposed to like honest and real and... I don't know if you've found that at all.
Yeah, I have. I feel like when it gets personal, then it's, ooh, let me not listen to this. You can talk about some things when things are more detached, you can, but I feel like when it gets personal, when it gets to the point where I need help or I don't know what to do in this situation, I feel it's, let me exit out of this conversation. That's what I've noticed. They're like, they get awkward, they get quiet, they get weird. Change the subject.
Or it's just like, no, it's okay, it'll be fine, and then nothing.
It'll be fine, just eat this lumpia. It's sure, I don't want to talk about it. And you're like, they get so awkward and so nervous. Yeah, when that vulnerability comes up. But what can you do? I feel like the solution is just to keep talking about it and normalizing it.
And one of the things that you and I talked about before, like during our phone call, was this concept of no hanky-panky.
Yes. Which that's so amazing that your mom uses that term too. And so does my mom. Go out and she'll be like, oh, no hanky panky. And I'm like, I can't guarantee that.
There's going to be lots of hanky and lots of panky.
Maybe a little bit of spanky in there too. Why not?
Yes.
I wonder.
Right.
Does anyone else use that term? Is it a Filipino mom thing?
I know. I think it's going to have to be a question we put out to the masses for real. Because there is that whole, okay, I guess maybe we're like not shy about it, but then you're not supposed to do it. So you're not supposed to engage in it. But when you do, we can talk about it. I don't know. There's like such a huge disconnect, it feels like. And I've gotten a little bit of like pushback, not pushback per se, but I've definitely gotten some of the, oh, what are you talking about? Filipinos talk about this all the time. And I'm just like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think maybe one of the things someone else had brought up to me once too is that, oh, maybe it's because you're Filipino American that you've gotten that kind of push, or that kind of like hiding stuff, not really talking about it kind of sense. And I was like, okay, but then why my mom and my dad, they're more Filipino than me because they grew up in the Philippines, but that means more Filipino. I say that jokingly. Yeah. But so what does it come down to? It's just something that I just feel like, I know y'all think we're open about this, but.
Yeah. I feel like there's such a sharp change in lanes or a sharp turn. The second someone gets uncomfortable, it's like hard left, hard right. And then you could feel and you can see in that moment exactly when it happens. Oh, you got a little uncomfortable and then. It got weird. Yeah. But talk about, they can talk about stories, but as soon as it gets personal, I feel like as soon as people start to ask for help, then it's, I don't know what to do. Yeah. Freak out. Why we need to have these conversations more. Yeah.
Goodness. Right. I do kind of wonder about, so you're an intimacy coordinator, which I feel like is a relatively new field, relatively new, like career. And also, it is within the art and Hollywood-ish media like industry. So there's almost a part of me that's like, well, do your Filipino family like understand that concept a little bit more than they do the like educational piece?
I think they're more accepting of that than the fact that I'm a sex educator. I think because they're like, okay, you're going to get a job in Hollywood and your name's going to be in the credits and it's going to be cool. We can be proud of you. But I also think because there's a mental health component to it. There's a lot to it. It's not just choreographing sexy sex scenes on film and television. Right. There's a lot of mental health that goes into it. But I guess for those who don't know, who aren't familiar with intimacy coordinating, because it is a very new field, it came up roughly like 2018-ish. And I don't know if you've seen The Deuce on HBO. You've seen that?
I haven't, but I know of it.
Yeah, Maggie Gyllenhaal's in it. She's amazing. But it's sex workers in The Deuce in New York. And the actors requested, there's a lot of intimate scenes. There's a lot of nudity. There's a lot of simulated sex scenes in that. And they were asking for help because it's such a vulnerable spot to be in. It's scary. You're going to do this intimate scene almost fully naked. And then this is going to be on HBO, Netflix or something for forever. It's scary. It's vulnerable. And so the actor requested help and stuff. And this was also around the same time as all the Harvey Weinstein bullshit. So it just made sense. And to me, I'm like, why didn't they have this much sooner? If you're doing stunts, let's take stunts, for example, and you need to throw someone out of a window. You're not going to just throw them through the window. You need to prep beforehand. If you're going to do a stunt, you're not just going to throw them out of the window. There's so much prep. There's so much rehearsal. There's aftercare too afterwards. And you can't just do that on a whim. And same with intimate scenes. It's so vulnerable. And it has harmed a lot of directors who have pushed an actor's boundaries a little too far. After a lot of actors are trained not to say no to something uncomfortable. And so sometimes they do get pushed a little too far. And then they end up with trauma, some emotional, mental health issues later on down the line. And it's just, I don't know, to me, it's a fucking no-brainer. We should have had this so long ago, but I'm also glad that it's finally coming to light now. Yeah, I guess also to break it down for folks who aren't familiar with intimacy coordinating. So we choreograph scenes with nudity. We choreograph the simulated sex scenes as well, choreograph and coordinate it. But most importantly, we are actor advocates. So we are the liaison between the actor and the production. So we're the person they can say no to. And typically our work, you get the script, you figure out what you're doing. You talk to the director first. Okay, what is it in the scene that you would like to portray and act out? And then you talk to the actors and all the people involved individually. What are your boundaries? What's this? What's that? And consent, boundaries, and figuring all this stuff out is crucial. And then with that, after that conversation, we figure out what they're comfortable with, what they're not comfortable with, which consent, their consent can be revoked at any time. They're free to change their minds. We remind them that. But after that conversation, we also talk to the legal team and be like, okay, this is what they're comfortable with, blah, blah, blah. Topless nudity, excluding nipples, right? Maybe they don't want to show their nipples. That's fine. Send it to legal so they can draft it in their writer and their contract. Then we rehearse. And then on shoot day, we do the scene within the limits of their contract and their writer. So nothing gets crossed. And then we're there on shoot day being like, okay, cool. This is happening, blah, blah, blah. Okay, maybe we saw a nipple here. Let's probably do that again. Stuff like that. So actor advocates and the liaisons between them and production, the people they can say no to. And so they can feel safe and comfortable. And the production, the shoot day, everything can run comfortably and not have any awkward moments, no surprises. So
I love that. I think, and I do want to say too, that it's not necessarily just on film, right? Like people do intimacy coordinating for theater too, right?
Yes. Intimacy directors.
That's what they're called. Oh, okay. Nice. Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. Because this is not really a funny story, but a funny story. I remember, I want to say it was like middle school sex ed class, but it was really like a substitute teacher happened to be there on the day that they were teaching sexual health in my like science class. You know what I mean? It was one of those situations. And I remember there was the anonymous question section at the end. And my question was like, was about like movies, like in movies, are people actually like having sex in real life? Because as a middle school student, it was just like, I don't understand what's happening. Mm-hmm. Is this real? And while it was anonymous, I remember there was like one kid who was like, that's such a stupid question. And it's just
middle school.
But it felt like such an important question at the time, because I think I remember thinking like, is that really okay? Are they actually okay with all of these things? And so this was like the early 90s. So who even knows if people were feeling comfortable in all of those scenes that were in the movies that we watched back then. And if the actors were like watching those old movies now, like if they were to relive any sort of like traumatic moment, but can they say like the immense pressure to even be able to own up to something like that would be a lot.
And it's hard if you're starting off in acting and then you're here with this big director and the director's like, I want you to do this. It's hard for them to say no. And I know in the past, like in the 90s, 80s, there have been situations in films where there was some sex involved, but we want to try to prevent that because it's not a porn shoot and this is a film and or a TV shoot. And so what we actually do too is we have intimacy garments that we have them wear. And if it's like a heavier scene, then we even cut like yoga mats and we put it in their underwear so to reduce the sensation.
Oh.
And so they, yeah, so there's always a barrier in between, a modesty garment in between, so they're not actually touching directly. And then with film magic and the camera magic, it can look like they are skin to skin, but there's always a barrier there.
That's so cool. I remember one of my friends was in a sex scene for some show. And I remember her showing us like what one of what did you call it again? The modesty garments?
Modesty garments, yeah.
And I was like, well, I remember being so fascinated with it because I was like, that's so cool. Like the thing that you never see. And I was just like, it's so fascinating. I would hold on to it forever.
Right? It's cute. And then you could cut out yoga mats. You can take them to costume and then they can sew it into the underwear so that it's more comfortable for them. Because there are moments, like we're all human. Sometimes we're going to have a physical response to it. That's okay. But as long as there's a modesty garment in between, because that could potentially make the other actor uncomfortable in the moment. So we just want to reduce the sensation as much as possible so things don't get too awkward and the other person doesn't get too awkward. But it can range from something like a strapless thong to underwear with yoga mat material inside. You can put a pad there as well, or you can even have like a slightly deflated yoga ball in between to make the pumps look a little more realistic and bouncy.
Oh, that's cool. Movie magic. I feel like, right? I just learned so much.
Because if you just do this, it doesn't look real, but with half deflated ball yoga ball, you get the bounce to make it look more realistic.
Yeah, that's so cool. God, there's just something about that that's so innovative to be able to utilize. Yeah.
When they taught us that, I was like, wow, that's genius. That's brilliant. Oh my gosh.
That's so cool. I actually, this isn't one of the questions, but I'm actually curious about, because I feel like there's, for all of the sexuality, the sex scenes that are present in popular media, right? There's still the shame and the not the same level of acceptance at all when it comes to actual like adult performers in pornography. I would actually love to hear like your perspective on that, like as an intimacy coordinator.
And
what are your thoughts on the idea that like there is so much sexuality in popular media? I'm thinking of like Euphoria, right? Even, oh my god, Riverdale. And there's so many, like all of these like shows that are legit teenagers. Like that's a whole other level. But there's that, and like people are like enthralled by it and like really captivated by it. And then when it comes to like adult film actors, there's like a different level of like disdain almost. Mm-hmm. Like it's acting, it's art. There is obviously like a little bit more of an intimate situation, but I feel like, is it? So like, I want to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah, I feel when it comes to television, like Euphoria and Riverdale, which Euphoria has an intimacy coordinator, and HBO, I believe is the only network right now. I think Netflix may be following suit. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. But HBO makes it mandatory for any of their shows with simulated sex or nudity on there to have an intimacy coordinator on set for those. So
nice.
Shout out to them for doing that. And I think other production companies and studios are following suit. I know Netflix has used some intimacy coordinators for their work on some shows on Amazon Prime and stuff. And I think it's finally becoming more and more normalized, which is great. When it comes to shows and films, I feel like people can connect with those characters more. And that's why they go to it. And then they see these sex scenes and like, oh, okay, it's more okay in their heads. But then they watch porn. Of course, there's a disconnect. A lot of the times, people don't watch it for the storyline a lot of the time. And so there is that disconnect with them. And I feel like there is still that stigma and that shame and being like, because there's that more distance. And they're like, okay, yeah, what they're doing is dirtier. That's what I felt. But it's not.
Oh, that's such an interesting way to, I didn't think about that, like that there is some distance for them.
Yeah, for the viewer and the performers, there is that more of that distance. But I trained with a cohort with some adult performers and sex workers and sex educators, and they're out in the world and we're doing our intimacy coordinating work, and I love that because they have that experience and the set experience, and they know how awkward, they know how weird it can be. And I feel like that's such an advantage as a sex educator, as a sex worker, as an adult performer. You know what's happening. That means people don't come at the same time after 20 seconds of PIV sex against the wall. That's not realistic. And I feel like, and I love that. I love that there's more of us and more of them as well getting into the field, because we have a little more background knowledge on what's happening and how to navigate these spaces and then and bodies and how to make angles look cool and realistic. But like maybe that can help bridge the gap too between the awkwardness and stigma that some people feel towards pornography and adult performances. But time will tell.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good, way to put that. I didn't think about that at all. Actually, the way our brains wrap around these things.
Let's take a quick break. Check in with your body. What do you need? Do you need to stretch? Do you need to use the restroom? Do you need some extra water? Do whatever you need to take care of you, and we'll be right back. You're enjoying the Raw Bar podcast and you're wanting to learn a little bit more about specific sexuality topics, check out my Dive Deeper series on YouTube. In Dive Deeper with Goddess Cecilia, I touch on specific topics like waterproof adult toys, self-pleasure health benefits, and postpartum depression. It's the same sassy me, but in video format. And I do it all while wearing a mermaid tail. Sometimes I'm on location at a tropical destination, and sometimes I'm sitting on my seashell throne. As your pleasure guide, this is a personal invitation to you to explore all the ebbs and flows of pleasure and self-care. It's my honor to bring a little whimsy and magic to a topic that has historically been so taboo. A new Dive Deeper drops monthly on YouTube, so make sure you search for Dive Deeper with Goddess Cecilia and subscribe.
I want to talk about sex and spots.
Okay.
Right? I love that name so much. and so I guess the part of my question is like, why squat? And also, we know that movement is not only great for like physical health, but it's also great for mental health. And like, how does that affect sexual health as well? So why squats and how does movement play into all of it?
I guess I'll go into the history and how I came up with that name. I've been doing sex ed stuff for several years. And then a few years ago, I was a personal trainer at Bougie at Equinox. And this was before I found therapy. Right. I was just a very angry person. I wasn't angry towards people. I was just angry like at myself because there's a lot of unresolved trauma and shit that I was dealing with. It was through physical exercise that I felt much better. And so I squatted, I deadlift a lot. And that was what I was known for at the gym. Look at this small chick. She's really strong. That's an advantage if you're short. You can generally lift more weight, less of a distance to take the bar. I started noticing the more and more I did it, the more and more I felt better, the less angrier I got, the more and more everything else went together. My libido went up as well. And I was just more confident. And I just felt better each day. And then I just thought, I like sex ed stuff and I like squats. So let's just put it together because the alliteration is cool. Sex and squat. And then through that process, I realized, yes, we see mental health and physical health as separate entities and sexual health, but they all it into one puzzle. They're in this super codependent monogamous relationship with each other, and they do everything together, right? You can't see them without the other one on their arm. Mental health and physical health, our minds and our bodies are in this constant interplay with each other 24/7. If our bodies are feeling weird, if we're stuck in this position, our brain's going to sense that. Our mind's going to sense that and be like, oh, you're stressed. And then we're going to feel even more stressed. Or maybe even if we start to think about something stressful, then your body reacts to it too. And we're oftentimes we're very unconscious of what's happening. But through all my years of training as a personal trainer, it's crazy to me that you can see, like I can see based on how you walk, based on how you move your limbs, based on how you sit, how you squat, how you deadlift. I can tell who's at a desk job. I can tell if you've been had a stressful day just by seeing your body. And it's such a trip to me because your body doesn't lie because it's just listening to what your brain is unconsciously saying to it. And it was I remember I was getting a massage one time and I had this, my upper right shoulder and my left hip, my left knee are very sensitive. I've had the most injuries there. And I remember when one of the massage therapists took a trigger point out in my shoulder, my trap. And I just started crying. And I was like, what the fuck? I don't feel sad, but I just started crying. But it's because your body holds on to that trauma. Trauma is held in the fascia, in your skin, in your tissues, in your cells. And it's stored there and goes to the easiest route. So my most injured places, traps, hip, knee. One time someone gave me a massage around my knee and I started crying. And I wasn't sad, but I started crying and then I started laughing because I was crying because I didn't know what the fuck was going on. But it's because a lot of my trauma was stored there in my knee. It's the weakest link in the chain of my body. And I started slowly starting to realize mind and body, they all work together. You can't really separate it. And hence, well, sex and squats. Yeah. So you're tying the mind and the body together. That's my very long explanation for it. Tying the mind and the body together, and sexual health is in there as well too. Yeah,
that makes so much sense. Oh, do you think so? That's so interesting too. That you're like, I know that you've been sitting at a desk job, kind of thing. Would you be able to tell if someone was, I don't know, like maybe they just got out of a very intense like scene and they need a little stretching kind of situation,
right? Yeah, definitely. It's such a trip because it's creepy. Sometimes I'll just people watch. I'll go somewhere by myself and I'll like people watch and they'll be like, their arms are swinging this way. I wonder what they do. Are they look a little stressed or their hips look a little tight? And I'm not trying to be creepy, but I'm like, oh, it's just automatic to me sometimes. I'm like, your body doesn't lie. The way you move doesn't lie. And it tells me a lot about what's going on. But yeah, especially after a scene too, and you're just like, what?
They're just like holding themselves a little tighter and you're just like, hey, that's so funny. So in related to the topic of kink, right? So we've been in this. In Boston, they're lifting the mask mandate this Saturday and it's just like, ugh, I can't even deal with half of these people who are like, eh. Anyway, but we're still technically in the middle of this pandemic. Do you think though that, I mean, at least those of us who've been paying attention, that there are concepts that you could transfer or borrow from like sexuality and kink and like consent and like interacting with people and taking care of our bodies, that sort of thing?
Yeah. So I feel like the Bandisal really threw a lot of us for a loop. And it really, I mean, a lot of us were stuck with living with partners of people that we can't spend 24/7 with. And we learned that in the moment. I think the Bandisal really brought that to light into everybody's faces. Okay, maybe wants, needs, and blah, blah, blah. Maybe we should have these important conversations and blah, blah, blah. Especially when it comes to romantic partners, when it comes to sexuality too, and relationships. I think the Bandisal really brought a lot of that to light. And now we're in a position where we're forced to have these conversations day in the discomfort. And I think we can take those lessons to have more open, honest conversations about sexuality and kink, push to the corner, push to the edge, and then forced to do this. And I think we can take those lessons even further and we can continue to have these open conversations and honest conversations about sexuality and about kink. And especially with kink, where open, honest communication is the standard, communicating, right. Talking about everything. That is the baseline when it comes to BDSM and kink and play and all of that, which I think should be the baseline for even non-kinky relationships, situationships, yes, hookups, and all of that. Like, why does it take, why do we have to look to the kink and BDSM community for all of that? I should be the fucking standard everywhere.
And not even just sexual, like sexual relationships or like intimate relationships. I really feel let's just apply this to like everything, any interaction.
Exactly. Imagine if we were able to have these open, honest conversations and not be awkward about them. Imagine if we were to have more orgasms and enjoy more pleasure and play. Shit, the world would be a much happier place. We wouldn't be starting wars because everyone's too busy having orgasms.
I really feel that on a deep level.
Oh, God.
Such a deep level. Now, do you think that there's still a lot that people get wrong about sexuality and kink?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think people like to put sexuality and kink and the facets of it into little boxes and into sharp lines. Sexuality, you're gay or you're straight, whatever.
Mm.
And it's, no, there's a lot of in between. In fact, there's more in between than there is those outliers. It's not just black and white. There's more color. Look at the gray areas. Look at the rainbow. Look at this prism. What's more exciting than living in these opposite worlds? It's sexuality and kink. It's not so structured. It's not so black and white. There's a lot of movement, and that's the beauty of it. You can be here one day, you could be here another day, or here one minute and here the other minute. It's beautiful that you can traverse through this whole spectrum. And I'm a lesbian, and I watch gay porn. I get off to gay porn. I think it's hot. Like, and to me, it's not weird. And I'm sure to other people, like, you are strictly a lesbian. You should only be watching lesbian porn and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, I fucking get off the two dudes swinging their dicks around. That's fine. Whatever. It shouldn't be weird. You like what you like. It's fine. I'm not harming anyone. But I think there's just beauty in the fact that you can traverse this spectrum whenever the fuck you want. In kink and with BDSM and with play, you could do that as well. You don't have to be so rigid in one spot. You don't have to stay in one spot. You can explore all these other spots and be like, maybe I like a little bit of this. Maybe I didn't like this so much, but that's fine. I'm going to go back to here and then maybe try this one and this and blah, blah, blah. And it's beautiful. Mm. And I think
That's so true.
More.
Yeah. I feel like it can just like open people's worlds and make space for so much possibility and so much more joy.
Right. Yeah. Seriously. If you can traverse this huge space, then you can explore all the colors fucking rainbow. You're not just stuck in that black and white. And I don't know, it's beautiful. You can paint this masterpiece of yourself and your sexuality and your desires and your pleasure, and that with someone else too, and then you have an even bigger masterpiece. It's beautiful.
I love it. I actually was just like, oh my gosh, it's almost time. I do have a couple more questions.
Sure.
Okay, so these are my two standard questions that I like to ask everybody. But what is something about sexuality, about intimacy, that you think people are like, oof, like they are not ready to hear it, but you're like, it's time, people, it's time.
We're all a little gay. The default is not straight. The default is we're all a little gay. Mm-hmm. And this has been proven by the infamous Kinsey studies that scale from 0 to 6. And for those who are unfamiliar with it, I think we did these studies in the 50s, 60s?
Yeah, but 50s, I think.
Yeah, so came up with the scale 0 to 6. 0 is exclusively heterosexual and 6 is exclusively homosexual. And then he was able to find that it was very rare for people to deem themselves as exclusively 100% heterosexual and exclusively 100% homosexual. There are more people in the middle, like 2 to 5. And I think that's something that we should all remember is not the default. We're all a little curious out there, more people than you would expect. And they've even done like studies where they track the eye movements of heterosexual men who are watching heterosexual porn. They're looking at the penis a lot. They're looking at the male performer's penis a lot. Yeah, they'll look at the a woman's body as well, but a lot of the time their eyes are all are on a male performer's penis. And I think, again, people like to define themselves and put themselves in the boxes and the black and white because it's easy to comprehend. But the reality of things is we shouldn't have those boxes because the majority, the average is in the middle. A little bit opposite.
People like putting themselves in boxes, and also the boxes are not self-defined like they were handed down to us.
Like, you know what? Yeah. Fuck the box. We don't need the fucking box.
You can fuck the box if you want, I guess. That's true. But
sometimes
that's fun. Yes. All right. What are you currently finding pleasure in this moment?
Oh, what am I currently finding pleasure in this moment? The fact that I've been able to reconnect with my kinky self again. I think the fun de sal threw me for a loop. And I went through a lot of shit, a lot of trauma, people, close loved ones passed away, a couple breakups. Mm-hmm. My parents were shitty landlords, racist landlords tried to unlawfully evict my elderly parents. Mm-hmm. They had to help them buy a fucking house. Escrow is stressful. Like the past couple of years, I lost a lot of my kinky sexual self. And it wasn't until... hell, it was a random Tinder hookup that brought it back to life. And then I realized, fuck, there it is. I think kink is very healing. I think kink is therapeutic. And I think it was in that situation that I realized, oh my gosh, this is where I find my pleasure and my power and my confidence is being in this kinky space with a trusting, willing partner. Who I mesh with. Yeah, it wasn't until I started swinging my floggers around again that I realized, oh my God, there I am.
There you are.
So that's what I'm finding most pleasure in at the moment. So I'm finding my kinky self again, which I lost during the fun to sell, and I was sad about that. Circumstances, partners who weren't as into it. And now it's, oh my gosh, there it is.
Right.
Two straps and back.
I can feel the pleasure. I can feel that. That's such a good feeling. Yeah. Oh, okay. So I do have one last question, and that is, how can people find you?
Oh yes, you can find me at _sexandsquats. But yeah, that's like my fourth or fifth business account on Instagram. They like to try to shut me down. Just don't report me, please.
Oh, God, yeah.
I'm trying to put up beta.
Can you not be... Right. Can you not be a douche canoe and report? Like, for what? Hey,
for what? Oh, my gosh. Just don't report me. Just don't report me.
There's so many other things people could be doing that's better, worth more than time. Go masturbate or something.
Exactly. Go fuck yourself.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. Maria... thank you so much. This was so great to hang with you for the past hour and chill and talk and learn more about the amazing things that you're doing in this world.
Thank you. I had such a fun time. And I'm so honored to be here today. And I thank you for your time. And I had such a fucking blast.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yes. And for those of you who are watching this live, and for those of you who are catching this later, be on the lookout because we're going to be collaborating a little bit more on some future things. So follow us, see what's going on, and you'll be seeing definitely more of the two of us.
All right, maybe we'll do a class or a workshop. I don't know. We have to find out.
I mean, that's why you have to follow us.
Exactly. Or you can just miss out on all the fun, whatever.
I guess they could.
All right.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you so much.
Well, friends, it's time to go our separate ways. I hope you're feeling as satiated and stimulated from today's podcast as I am. Make sure you rate and review today's episode on Apple Podcasts and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Lastly, head over to rawbarpod.com. That's rawbar rawbarpod.com to find out how you can connect with my guests and me, and how you can be a part of the Raw Bar Regulars. See you next time.